Okay, this, because we do ancestry, like yesterday, they were analyzing profiles for their ancestry.
Okay, everyone, I think we are backstage. Yeah, it's our big budget that we're spending here. We were trying to bring in a speaker, and I said, well, I got about $200 for snacks you could have. Okay, so first off, let's have a motion to approve the agenda. Thank you. In a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? We're still tomorrow. I wish there was a way of disposing with that. Or maybe a meter in my ear that said we've got quorum on that one. So now there are two approval of meeting minutes, so bear with me. The first one is from our last Senate meeting, January 22nd. I'd like a motion to approve those minutes. That was our first, our regular meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, regular meeting. Yeah, thank
motion.
You. Motion, thank you. Seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And the last one is a motion to approve the minutes from the special meeting we had on January 29th. Motion? Second?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thanks very much, everyone. So you know what? We're down to our last three of the semester. Isn't that odd?
Wow.
Even though we teach until May, our last Senate meeting is April. So I'm just reminding you of the importance of being around for these. And I think the most important thing that's happening right now, well, there are several, aren't there? And I did put a space on the agenda for current events, specifically benign, so we could talk about whatever we needed to. But the thing, Victoria, did you have something in mind?
Yes, she does.
Yeah, yeah. One thing we all do, right? But it's a subject we've been avoiding out of deference to our colleagues, but it shall be avoided no more. But the first one, let's talk about the business of actually being accredited. So the HLC visit, who's heard anything about it? Just curious. Are most of you feeling informed about that or not informed? That's what I'm feeling. Most people are not informed, so except for those who are in meetings all the time.
I did read the
report.
The report
okay,
that,
for you.
That you went and presented, much of which, some of which was factually incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, maybe we should point
it?
Out some the only part of it, the parts that I needed to read. Yeah, sorry.
You better read it again. Some of it is outright lies.
Well, there were things that I thought were a bit watered down that they said
watered down.
Did water down a little more. Okay. Well, don't forget, we submitted our own report. So if we're all talking about the same thing in code here, there will be many, many aspects of that trapezoid, right, at some point. So, yeah, don't worry. Ours was not watered down unless they changed it, which I don't think they're allowed to. So just so you know, they're visiting main campus HSC on March 4th and 5th, and Gallup and Taos on the 1st and the 2nd. Sorry, I don't know which one is which. John, when are they coming? First
for
you all?
For Gallup.
So the 2nd for Taos. That's going to be a lot of driving for them. I'm assuming they're taking Sunday off, and then they're here Monday and Tuesday. They're in three public forums, and I'm actually, don't yell at me HSC folks, but I'm actually suggesting that they change one of the locations, because they had two at Domenici and one in the Anderson School. And I said, look, you need one in the sub. It's a central location.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you HSC people will hire me. Because I just thought it was ridiculous. And they actually said to me, pardon me? Yeah, thanks. And I also did say, as much as I love my senators from the HSC, they're often in surgery. And so they can't actually stop what they're doing and go, hey, if you can just hold that for a minute, I'll be right back. So they understood. Although, you're out. Who knows what goes on? Stephen, you'd have to tell me what happens.
When you don't want to know.
All right. So we've got the forms. Let me tell you the times for these. I'd like you to put these down for your constituents. And I'm sorry, this is not a copy I was given, so it's not something I can circulate just yet, I guess. March 4th, 10:45 to 12 p.m. Right now, that one's in the Anderson building. That sounds reasonable. That's a room 2110. March 4th, 2 to 3 is in the Domenici, and that's the one I'd like them to change if possible. She asked me would I prefer them to change the shared governance or the teaching, and I said, well, I think the shared governance, because I don't think we think there's anything wrong with our teaching, but we think there's something wrong with shared governance. So perhaps we'd like to weigh in on that. I'm hoping that 2 to 3 one on March 4th will be held in the sub. By the way, the reason they didn't do it is they said it was difficult with Zoom technology. But then Duane Arruti was in the office, the room here, the head of IT. When I said that, he said, well, no one asked me. I'm sure I can make that work. So sometimes the hands here don't, reach all the way around. So hopefully that will work. March 5th is at the Domenici Center, 10 to 11, room 2720, the same place that the second one is purported to be. So I'll keep you apprised as I hear about that. If it makes you feel any better, they've not yet identified the people from governance they're meeting with. And we're supposed to just save 2 days open. So maybe this is normal. I mean, how many accrediting visits do you go through? But I don't mind being dictated to, but how many of us have 2-3 days that can just say, no problem, right? So we'll work on that. Here's what I was told they are looking at and for. Quality assurance and quality improvement. So what does that mean? It means how far have we come in the last 10 years, and how do we continue to develop? I know that seems very vague, but areas they're particularly paying attention to, you won't be surprised, the first one is governance. The second one is financial controls audit, which also is a governance issue because it has to do with transparency. And as you know, we've had a lot more audits at the university than before, and apparently perhaps a need for that. Stability and leadership. Pamela has a really good take on this. Pamela G, who has worked her butt off on this. I mean, this is an incredible
feat.
President
forever.
Yeah, well, sorry. But not next year. You'll be free of me next year. But stability and leadership, we have had a great turnover, but what they're saying is we are still following the 2020 strategic plan under kind of Schmidley Bob. It went through those two gentlemen. And so I think that that is our guiding star right now. General education is one. We're in the process of redesigning general education. Still not sure what that means, but governance leaders are going to try and find out a little bit more about that as it goes forward. Strategic planning, assessment, and Monica, maybe if you know anything about these, do speak up. I don't know. Somehow you always feel you're involved in these things. But we haven't been very good in the past at assessing what we've done that's well. So we're doing better now, and we'll need to keep doing better as we go forward. Enrollment management, as you know, we've had downturns in that, so I'm sure they're concerned. They were surprised. Our team was surprised to see that they were interested in extended learning. I don't think that was an area they were anticipating. So people have had to jump through hoops now to get some information on that. And budget planning in general. We've done something very good, advising. I took some notes on that. I think our advising ratio was unbelievably horrible, and now it's much better. Our sponsored research is up on main campus from 93 to 143 million. Bravo to all the researchers. And as HSC, I always want to say, you guys always do great. You started below us at 45 million, and now you're up to 151 million. So you guys step it up on main campus. They were below us. Now they're above us.
Not we're actually close to 200 million this year.
From 11 to 18. Say it again.
I think we're close to 200 million this year. I'm on top slides.
Okay, well, I've only got 151 on our most recent document. Maybe it's not all in yet. Maybe it's
that was last
one.
Year's.
Well, last year was 204 million.
I got 151 from Pamela.
I think we're about 198.
Glad to know that you're higher than you were. But the ratio, I'm sorry, I'm not finding it on my sheet, but it was 877, something like 800 students to one advisor, and now it's 323, I believe, to one advisor. So our advising, we're at the top of our field now. Apparently that's really, yeah, and remember, we made an issue about that, right? We put a focus on that. Okay, going through these. Oh, HSC, the Rural Heroes. That's something they're very proud about. I suggest that anyone who knows anyone who's having a meeting, tout whatever it is you're good at. I'm sure the provost is doing this and the chancellor, but it'd be nice to make sure all our things got noticed. Okay, just quick budget information. We are having the provost come in. I think he'll know a lot more about this these days. The compensation, which is of interest to us, is still at 4% on the LFC side, the Legislative Finance Committee, but the House Appropriations Finance Committee is suggesting 3%. And here's the trouble with this, and I really struggle to wrap my mind around why it's difficult to express this to the legislators or to have them understand it the way we do. When we get 3% from the legislature, it pays for 50 cents on the dollar of your rate. So that means we need to kick in the other. This seems like not. This is a 1.5% raise, right? Go ahead. Did you have something?
It's even worse on the HSC side. Mm-hmm. The School of Medicine pays for about 17% of our salaries.
Yeah, and you use yes, yeah, different funds than we do. So we are asking that they fund the compensation entirely, and this is the CUP, the Council of University Presidents stance. I'm just not sure why we don't ask right out for that. You know why we don't say that? But I think there's something about marketing a 6% increase. Sounds bad, and they expect us to find the rest of the money. And then I kind of want to segue into something, and again, maybe we're going to have a presentation from Mike Rucker, our athletics chair, today. I don't know if he knows anything about this, but I think I have not seen you since I went to Santa Fe with President Stokes. She was called in to testify at the House Appropriations Committee. Did I see you already and tell you this? I hate to repeat myself. I think not, though, right? I hate to bore you. I'm probably fine with repeating myself. It's kind of my nature. The idea was to look at athletics across all the universities, and they saved UNM for last. And it was actually a really interesting idea. How much do you spend? How much of your budget is on this? How many scholarships do you have? How is the academic prowess of your athletes? And we went last, and of course, the chairwoman of this committee is interested in reinstating the sports network cut. And I think she asked point blank, President Stokes, it was a difficult conversation. She said, "Why I offered to help you, why didn't you take me up on it?" That's a hard thing to answer in public with TV cameras on you. And, you know, she took a breath, and I just thought, oh, man, good luck with that one. And she said, it was brilliant, actually. I can't ask for that because what you're offering me is a one-time deal. And, you know, Title IX issues, we have 22 sports. Everyone else has 16 to 18 sports. So why we're a poor school, we have that many, blah, 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 blah. So, but she handled it really well. So I went up to German chairwoman, I guess, Lundstrom afterwards, and we had met before, and I said, you know, I really appreciated this conversation because the faculty have been asking about this kind of enigmatic area of athletics for years. You know, where does the money go and who's monitoring it? And she smiled because she thought, well, yeah, we all agree. And then I even went so far as to say, we don't all agree on what sport to cut because many of us do think other things, other decisions could be made. But I said, where I believe we have consensus, and this is anecdotal, we've not taken a proper vote, but I've talked to a lot of faculty, we support President Stokes' right to make a decision. And she came here on March 1st with a gun to her head, really, saying, we will take away all your funding unless you make a decision. And so, I don't want to sound like I'm kissing up, because nobody, you know, I argue with everyone, but I think she made the decision she needed to make. And Ms. Lundstrom's smile went away at that point. And realized that we weren't going to have the friendly talk she thought we were going to have about that. I still stand by this. I think it's kind of awful. And if you've read the paper, what they're offering now, athletics was given $2.5 million. Help me out if I'm wrong. We asked, athletics is we, in this case, asked for $2 million more. We can argue about that later. Yeah, I my head still spins when I hear that. They have now said, oh, we'll give you $4.5 if you reinstate these sports. Okay, we needed the two more to break even now with what we have. So they, in their minds, again, I don't understand, maybe it isn't I, it is them, they think, well, we're giving you what we asked for, but they're saying, here is what you wanted, but now we're inviting 20 more people for dinner. So I hope you can do it on the $20, I think. So I also just think it sets a very bad precedent. Think of any one of us, especially those of us not in the STEM field. What if they say, we don't need French anymore, let's just teach Spanish. I will give you $2 million to teach Spanish. I would not feel good, and of course I'm in a very vulnerable area myself. Music is probably one of the ones that they could say, hey, you know, kids aren't making a lot of money in music. Why don't we get rid of that? We don't need the humanities. So this is why I think it's important. I only tell you so that you know. This is probably going to go through the House. We are hoping our people are hoping it does not get through the Senate. If it does get through the Senate, it'll be up to the Board of Regents. And actually, I very rudely did not introduce you to someone that I'll be introducing you later, but this is our new regent, Doug Brown. and I will bring him in the conversation later. I'm so sorry, Doug. That was very rude of me. They could vote it down. They could say, we don't want your money. We don't want your sinking money. But that has other... sorry, I'm not saying they would or wouldn't, but that has other ramifications. Like, then what happens to us, right? So this is a serious game of politics, and it's way above my pay grade. Okay, almost done now. Academics Within Borders is happening. Pretty excited. I know I keep talking about it, but finally, if you've been talking about it as long as I have, you know, sharing any good news is good. We leave Thursday, and I'm taking 8 faculty. President Stokes will be joining us a little late. She has a special meeting of the regions to attend on current events, Victoria, and things like that. And then Craig White will be coming. I asked him because he'd been involved, obviously, as dean of the business school, for a very long time, and the Dean of Engineering is coming. Any engineers? John, you're here. Christos is coming, and we're meeting with several people. We're spending a day at San Juan College, and we're getting to see how we can interface with them. How can we make transfers easier? How can our researchers work? I'm bringing David Hansen and Jeremy Edwards. I don't know if anyone knows him from Biochemical Engineering, and David, you've met before here. He's a chair of our Research Policy Council. Helen Waring is from math. These were areas they specifically asked about. Tiffany Lee's coming from Native American Studies, and I think Wendy Gray Eyes is coming also, just in case Tiffany gets called abroad. My chair asked to come, so he's coming. You can't say no to your chair. And then the other people. So it's about 11 of us total. And then I'm also, we're sort of brokering a meeting at 7 in the morning on Friday with the Economic Development Director, the mayor, and a Native American agricultural company. And then Regent Brown had actually started some connections there before that I think we'll try to follow up on. On the other side, I had a great meeting with the College of Ed Dean, Hector Ochoa, and kind of made a segue over to Dean Christodoulou from engineering about how we could ask, and I've said this before, PED, the new secretary is Karen Trujillo, to accept certificates that we would help create so that their faculty in rural communities can teach computer programming to their students. So it was a great meeting, and Hector got really excited about that. It was fun to see him excited. And I could be difficult, but I think the state needs to change it. If we need to change it on that level, I think we're doing some important work. Okay, so let me ask you a question before we go on, and I do want to go on. Should I save any information I have on the topic that shall not be mentioned until later? Until later? Would that be the best thing? Would it be better than truncating it?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, but that's okay, Lee. I know. I knew it would go over you. I'm just kidding. No, because he's so bright, he thinks in a very specific way. So I'm talking in a silly way. So thoughts on that for the people that do understand what I'm talking about? Sarah, later? Okay, I'll do that. So next on our agenda, Provost Wood, you've come at a perfect time. Come and join us. Can I get it?
Hi. Strange to see you here.
It's kind of nice, though.
Greetings, all. I think you know all that's going on around here. There's quite a menu of things going on here. My thought is not to walk through all that unless you want like a menu of topics and just let you ask questions about what you're interested in hearing about. It is unbelievable what's happening in the university right now. So just quick menu of topics, right? Anytime the legislature's in session, there's a lot at stake. This is a deep money year, but also a year with all the controversy around athletics happening. That means we're facing headwinds in the legislature like we've never faced before, literally like we've never faced before. We hope to do much better now that the appropriations bills are on the Senate side. But we
talked a little about the athletics. Yeah.
So we potentially face another really difficult fiscal year if we don't do better on the Senate side. But we do think we may be able to do better there. And when I say difficult, you know, if we don't do better on the Senate side, we face deeper cuts than we've faced in recent years. That's how bad it could be.
What are we looking at?
We might face $10 million in cuts this year.
Yeah, I heard over. Okay, so.
Now, we think we're going to be able to keep it much smaller than that. The President, our governmental relations team, are in Santa Fe a lot making that case. But the political dynamics on this are very, very different. That would be enough by itself. Alongside that, we have a huge transition to the Board of Regents, which we're very excited about. Five new regents coming on board, all that that implies. We've got our HLC every 10-year accreditation. That visit is this Friday to the branches, and next Monday and Tuesday here. That's been a huge lift. Pamela Cheek's not here, but she's carried the huge burden of that and has done terrific
Absolutely.
Work. She and I and Joe Stolman will be briefing the regents about that on Thursday afternoon. Tired yet?
Only because I just said some of those. Sorry.
Okay.
Could you
talk about we'll just wrap up. And alongside that, there's all those executive searches happening. And this just announced last week, drive for unionization of the faculty.
Right.
Yeah.
In the middle of all that.
Well,
that's the one.
So there is a whole lot going on.
Right.
I don't know what's of most interest to you all. I think I'd rather respond to you all's questions and thoughts.
Well, I'd like to know how you're handling the budget cuts. What are you thinking about that? I know I'm on the BLT, but...
Yeah. So the trouble is, of course, you can't plan what you don't know, and we don't know what our numbers are going to look like. Until the legislature gets done, but we're modeling a number of different scenarios. What we're determined not to do is simply assume that we can solve it with one-time money. It's time we have to call the question of if we take further cuts, deep restructuring in the university, and looking at where we can restructure to really save enough money that we can make life tolerable for folks like yourselves. Reasonable compensation, reasonable support for your research and teaching and creative work. What we've done for 10 years now is shaved everything down so close to the bone. Many of you no longer have travel support for your research and teaching. Many of you no longer have a phone in your office, because that's how tight money has become. Many of you no longer have the staff support you need. I think whoever the future provost is going to be are going to have to be building in some judgment calls about where do we find money to produce the support you need. And that may involve combining colleges. It might involve combining departments. I think we're at a level where we're going to have to be looking at those really difficult choices. We're also looking at things like, we now give large tuition waivers. You know, a lot of our students come in on tuition waivers. We may have to restructure that so that we're not giving as much in the way of waivers just to be able to support academic mission. I think that's a better choice than raising tuition in the kind of substantial way that meeting the recent cuts would require. And this is all maybe shocking news to our new regent at my side.
None is.
Yeah, none of this is. The level of challenge we face is really extraordinary. And here's my analysis of it is, if we don't get in front of this now, we end up in the kind of death spiral that really drives academic mission into the hole over time. We've tried to play for time as well as we could for a number of years now, thinking that the state will eventually come to its senses and reinvest. If you don't know this data point, it's important to know that. The state had to cut budgets after the Great Recession. Of those budget cuts, 44% landed on higher ed. As of today, we have about the same number of students we had 10 years ago. If you adjust for inflation, so in constant dollars, we're teaching that group of students with $24 million less every year than we had 10 years ago. That's just not sustainable. So finding the right kinds of restructuring that are smart, that allow us to get where we need to go, is just absolutely critical. It's hard to do when we've had such interim leadership, such distractions from a number of levels. But I think President Stokes, I, others in leadership, and President Kyle, are very aware that it's time to really move on some of this. And that's me.
Questions, yeah.
Aren't I the bearer of bright and charming news? Sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, when you read the newspaper, things sound very bright as far as higher education funding. And I'm surprised to hear that it's such an uphill battle in the Senate, and I was wondering what the politics are.
So the uphill battle's in the House, and we kind of have the worst news on that. And these aren't dumb decisions. I don't want to caricature what the legislature's doing. There's huge new money available. It's being poured into K through 12 education and early childhood. Those are good investments in New Mexico, right? That's going to help us in the long term. But plus they're required to. And our case is, yeah, do that, but preserve a really good research university for those kids to come to when they get out of K through 12, right? This year, we've not succeeded at that argument so far. So all that deep money you hear about, $1.1 billion in the state budget of $6.5 billion, that's being poured into other things in higher ed. Higher ed out of the House is getting 2% new money, which just doesn't get us where we need to be. It just doesn't get us where we need to be. We've had some enrollment challenges. That's on us to address and do better recruiting students. It's dissonant because of all the news about all the new money in the state, but there's reason.
So is it because they value additional funding for pre-K to high school as opposed to funding higher education? Or
there is a bunch.
There's something about us they don't like.
The athletic stuff has hurt us badly. There's no question it's hurt us badly. There's all this new research. The plasticity of young brains, investing in early childhood, giving them more stimulation, it's an incredible payoff if we do it well. I mean, that's not a dumb strategy. And then the Martinez-Yazzie cases have just mandated, and we need it, right? Those are good. One of my former students was a lead attorney on the Yazzie case. That's really good to be investing in that stuff. We've just got to make our case to the Senate now. The Senate is more amenable to our arguments because they don't like the dictating universe around us. I think we're going to do better in the Senate. I don't mean this is a sky-is-falling message. We're at 2% new money now. We think the governmental relations folks think we're going to double that maybe in the Senate. That helps a lot. We've got some other strategies to help. We're going to bring that 10 million number down, I'm quite confident. But it's not going to be an easy day. And it's going to involve some level of thinking hard with you all about how do we restructure in ways that let us reinvest. I'm not going to be, to the extent I'm here until June, and you should know I am an applicant for the longer term role, if I'm here longer than that. I'm not going to be arguing for trimming everybody back down, survive another year kind of strategy. We've got to be reinvesting in core academic mission where we need to be. And if we have to restructure to do that, I think that's the right decision.
And Nicole talked about a long-term planning committee to look at these things with faculty on it to make decisions like this. Yeah, it really is in a hard area. Other questions right now? Yes, everyone is happy? Yes.
This might not be coming from us, but can you tell her about the target opportunities?
Okay. That is
so that's very, very much coming from my office. So, as you know, the last 2 years laid groundwork and then implemented 6 months ago a really strong target of opportunity kind of hiring on this analysis. Our best play as a research university in the Mexico is to get it right. Find really excellent faculty from underrepresented groups, both on gender and racial ethnic lines, and recruit the best people in the country. We have to pay decently to get those. I mean, literally the best people in the country in different fields. We have to pay decently to get those people. We don't necessarily have to pay as well as Harvard does to get those people. If we have an agenda that's about serving the people of New Mexico, really creating an environment where a more diverse faculty can thrive, there's all kinds of folks dying to work in that environment. So we're pushing that hard. We've recruited. It's now 4 successful hires attached. I want to be careful because I've confused people in the past. The target of opportunity initiative is across racial ethnic lines, it's across gender lines, it's about a more diverse faculty to meet a more diverse American, right? Alongside that, we also have a Native American cluster hire that we're also doing. So the target of opportunities helped us with the Native American cluster hire. We've recruited 4 new Native faculty that'll be here, either are here now or will be here this summer. We've got several more. One of them's interviewing this week, another one next week, another one down the road a little bit. We've not done as well on recruiting Latinos and African Americans, but we're working on that hard as well. We think we're laying the groundwork to be really successful. But it's been a little confusing for departments. Some departments thought it was like there was one deadline and then you couldn't do it anymore. So we have to change the culture. The idea here is we have a deadline every fall, we have a deadline every spring. Departments can bring ideas forward for target of opportunity hires. So if you miss a deadline, it doesn't mean you're out of luck. It means you have time to be thoughtful and find the one best person in the country who would meet these criteria and really recruit them and bring them in. But to do it, you have to have a faculty vote. We're not going to recruit faculty and put them into a hostile department. It has to be supported by faculty. It has to be supported by the chair and dean. And then because the target of opportunity allows us to recruit people without competitive searches, the bar is high. You have to be really good. And there's a committee that I've named at my level with good, strong, diverse faculty representation that vets all of them. And they only go through if that committee also signs off. And we've already announced our deadline for the fall. There's a deadline coming up for the spring. We moved it to March 15th.
How is that hiring being affected by potential cuts right now? Are you sort of sheltering that?
So, yes. We are continuing that. The VPR and I set aside some money for bridge funding for those targeted hires. We're protecting that in the interest of it's just demoralizing for everybody. If we do nothing strategic and just hunker down, I believe this is a central strategic intellectual priority for this university, so I'm going to protect this as far as I can.
Other questions? Yes. Well, you're not a senator, so let me get to the senators first. Okay. John, was it you?
Me.
Oh, because I know you. I just couldn't see.
I was going to say, is this being driven by need or because if you really identify the areas where we want activities, academic activity to pursue, then it's not necessarily about attracting the brightest star on this planet. It's attracting a pool of applicants that you see the potential to develop something. We don't rely because there's absolutely no way that we're going to pay competitive salary for the rest of the country.
So my view is it's not either or. It's, we have to be hiring strategically in areas of emphasis that we think we can be nationally competitive in. But I'm not going to give up on competing for the best. I mean, we're going to go out and try and bring the best people in the country into the we have New Mexico to offer. We're creating an environment that lots of people want to be part of. But yeah, point well made, Cousin. Right? Can we really pay UC San Francisco salaries in microbiology? Maybe not. But can we get anywhere close to that and create an environment that people want to be here, so they don't have to fight traffic in San Francisco? There's people like that.
Mm-hmm. Or buying a house, you know, for $1 million for a thing. Sarah, did you raise your hand? Someone else did here, but also Nancy.
Thank you very much for working on issues of equity and inclusion and diversifying our faculty. But I want to go back to this question of strategic hires. 6 years ago, the Diversity Council put together a framework for strategic action that's available on diverse.unm.edu, where we talked about cluster hires that would harmonize expertise in things like race and social justice, and Native American studies, etc. Going forward, is there a plan to do that? Because again, it creates community, it creates interdisciplinary innovation. For instance, we have the first race and social justice graduate certificate in the country that has already admitted 21 students, 5 students to graduate in 2.5 years. We have an undergraduate proposal underway. So that's the kind of community that actually builds institutional transformation. I'm wondering, going forward, if there's any thought on harmonizing with the work that was already done with the Diversity Council 6 years ago.
So lots of what I've been working on, both as senior vice and now as provost, has been informed by that whole that analysis 6 years ago. It's been one among several influences in thinking about what UNM's strongest play is on this terrain. If I'm in this office longer, I think the next cluster hire will be a Latino, Hispanic, Chicano kind of cluster hire for faculty, given who we are, where we are. The way we frame that is it's broad intellectual training for faculty in any area of emphasis at UNM. Could we think about doing something specifically around a cluster hire on, to take your example, race and social justice, right? We could certainly frame intellectual terrain as opposed to identity terrain, right? Native American cluster hire is an identity terrain. A Latino Chicano hire would be an identity terrain. We could think about doing cluster hires in more a thematic sort of theme or thematic mode. Some universities have done that. I haven't thought it through. I think if I were making a decision today, I would probably do a Latino, Chicano, Hispanic cluster hire next. I'm open to arguments about other ways of proceeding. I think we're New Mexico, and that's where we can actually hire the best people.
And if I could just add, I think it's important that people who have peer-reviewed scholarship and teaching letters are making the decisions of the scholars that are chosen for these positions. And I'm not clear that that's what's happening.
That is absolutely what's happening. I will have it no other way. That is absolutely what's happening.
In terms of people who have a publication record in the expertise that is being sought. Yeah.
Okay, Lee, go ahead.
So up until moving to New Mexico, I lived, grew up in, trained in, and practiced in many all cities that had a large African-American population. And I've been particularly struck by the dearth of African-Americans in New Mexico, except, I guess, for Hobbs, apparently.
3% in a state.
Yeah, but I think 1% in male American, something like that. And while I totally understand the need for the other areas of diversity, I'm really worried about the lack of African Americans, and that my point is you need a critical mass of African Americans for other African Americans to want to come here, because they must feel really lonely if they have the intestinal fortitude to move here. And I wondered what you were planning on doing about that.
I think that's exactly right. We actually hired a number of African American faculty about 5 years ago and lost a good chunk of them for exactly those reasons. I think the cluster hiring strategy is the right one, though, because you can bring in a cohort of folks, form a cluster around them. We're doing that partly with Robin Newton, I think, in the Native American cluster hire. Robin and others out of the Native faculty have agreed to serve as in a mentoring role. John Lavelle's been part of this conversation, too. As we bring in Native scholars, create a mentoring structure, both in their departments but also with other Native faculty to create more of a sense of community and shared effort within the university. I think we can do that on African American training too. It's always going to be a heavy lift in New Mexico.
Yeah. I just don't want to get lost in the shuffle.
Okay, guys, I'm trying to stay on time today because of everything we have, so I only have one more minute. If someone has a really short question, but I'm really serious. If it's a long question, then you will. Jason?
I got a question regarding enrollment. Can you comment on anything going through the legislature currently that would reinforce the lottery scholarship or bring it back up to levels we haven't passed? Mm-hmm.
So there's only one bill that's getting traction. There's several lottery bills, but only one that's gotten traction. It's sponsored by Senator Jacob Candelaria. Mm-hmm. It would eliminate the 30% payout requirement, but replace it with a minimum. Eventually, it's $41 million a year, which is what the typical payout has been when that 30% payout rule has been in effect. So over the course of the 2 or 3 years, there'd be a minimum payout of $41 million for scholarships every year. And several other changes that our students, who know this terrain better than I do, think is the right way to go on the lottery scholarship. It would allow the lottery to grow while still funding scholarships a little better than they are now. The second thing going on is the legislature looks like they're going to move to put $25 million into a college affordability fund that's separate from the lottery, but also help on our enrollment. There is good news on the enrollment side. Very preliminary good news.
What's
our
here?
Applications are way over where they were at this time last year.
Okay.
Now, the trouble is last year the funnel happened after the application period. We lost a whole bunch of people who we'd accepted into the university. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure to keep that funnel wide enough that we build enrollments this year. Right now, things are looking good.
And do you remember what the exit strategy, they interviewed people, about 150. Why did they not come here? Was it crime?
There was no one factor. It was crime in Albuquerque. It was lottery scholarship. It was job market finally took off in New Mexico, especially a lot of young men talked about, I decided to go to work instead. It was a combination. Crime looks like it may have been the big one.
Yeah, which is sad and out of our control a little bit.
From rural New Mexico especially.
Something to this, because it's really important. If you hear someone saying that the job market is better than going to university, it doesn't make any sense. We're failing completely.
There's no data to
tell the students that for 4 years, it's a big investment. You get a better salary, whatever.
No, the data is crystal clear. You're absolutely right.
I would say that
they don't come, so we can't tell them that, right? So
their parents don't.
If I might, it's the other way around. When the economy is bad, I'm just been laid off. I'm going to finally go back and spruce up my education. Mm-hmm. That and when that demand factor goes away, is another downward element in enrollment. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Provost.
Thank you all.
Really
good
appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Okay, we're also hurrying because Mike Rocha has to get out of here to take care of his kids. So he is the chair of our athletics council, and, with everything in the world going on right now, please come join us.
Yeah, thank you, Pamela, for accommodating. I have to run and pick up the kids before my wife's out of town. It was just like a big juggle today, so I apologize. I didn't mean to jump you.
I know. Normally, you
I'm sorry.
You've got a birthday athletic problem.
Just as a matter of Mike Rocha from Department of Political Science. Nice to see you all. I've been on the Athletic Council for about 6 or 7 years now, and this is my first time as chair. I've been chairing since October, or November. The Athletic Department, just by way of Athletic Council, by way of background, we have 12 voting faculty members, 4 voting students, one of which is a graduate student, one is a student athlete, 2 are undergrads, typically from ASUNM, 1 voting alum, and 2 non-voting ex officio members. Athletic director is a member, and also a faculty athletic representative, a FAR, and Amy Neal in the back of the room there. And in that respect, we actually take great pride in being a laboratory for shared governance. And so this is one of the few committees and councils on campus, for example, where there are voting members of faculty right next to voting members of the students and student body, and we take great pride in that. The Athletic Council charge is, our basic chief duties are to formulate, maintain, and review general policies pertaining to athletics, intercollegiate athletics, and we do our best to support the personal and academic welfare of the student-athlete, protect institutional integrity, and ensure compliance. We meet once a month. We've got our next meeting actually on Thursday. Our goals for this year were, first of all, to do some committee housekeeping. So we needed to institutionalize our role in a number of ways, for example. We empowered our subcommittees to identify metrics to better assess compliance and academics. Really a fruitful conversation now. We are clarifying our roles as liaisons, individual teams. So each of us represent a team on the athletic council. We are fine-tuning our student athletic exit interviews. One of the most important things we do at the end of each year. Now we're actually proposing on Thursday to do it each semester so we can catch transfers and those who exit in the fall semester as well. We sit down with student athletes who are graduating or have exhausted their eligibility, and we ask them a series of 10 to 12 questions about their experience, and we always get really useful information out of there. And then we're also, importantly, we're updating our charge, which we hope to have back to the Faculty Senate in about 2 months. Yeah, we're making great progress with that. It's something we've been working on for years. Our second goal has been to remain proactive and really address some important issues facing student athletes, the budget being one, which we're about to address on Thursday. And it's going to be a two-part presentation on Thursday and then in March. And then also mental well-being, something that's been identified all across the nation for student athletes and students in general, something we're trying to stay on top of too, just a broader, to encourage a broader university discussion on mental well-being for student athletes. And then finally, we're trying to build relationships across campus, build relationships of mutual trust with the athletic department, engage the student body more often with through their representatives, and then in a way to empower our subcommittees to actually try to build some of that trust with athletic council, with the athletic department. In the past 5 or 6 years, there's been sort of a reputation the athletic council doesn't do much. We want to change that. We want to be more proactive, particularly right now, given this important transition period that athletics is going through. And in fact, in relation to that, one thing is very clear to me, is that it's something we're trying to stay on top of. The university needs to have a conversation about UNM athletics. We just have to. This has to happen. And this is the time to happen right now. It needs to be a conversation that involves faculty, staff, students, and then eventually we can move on to engaging alumni and the public too. Because clearly there's a thirst, there's a demand for this conversation here on the radio every single day, and we need to be proactive on that. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that the athletic council can serve that function for us, report back to the Faculty Senate. It's part of engage that conversation. And at the very least, we need to answer three questions. First, we need, and there's empirical research out there, political scientists, and we have sociologists in the room. There are sociologists all across the nation who are studying this. A, what is the value of athletics to a university? We've got to identify that. I mean, there's empirical value that an athletic department brings to a college campus, and we can dig into the research and have that conversation. B, what are our expectations for UNM athletics specifically? And C, what are we willing to spend on athletics? And I think those are, at the very least, three questions that we need to talk about at the university, and then also engage the public with that too. But it needs to start here. It really does. And with that, I'll stop. There's one thing I do want to clarify, Pamela, and of course, I know the buds at the top of everyone's mind. There's one thing, and this is from conversations with the athletic department, that they are seems to be unclear on, and I'm unclear on, is how deep the threat is, and how deep the strings are, how important the contingencies are. And you mentioned if we don't reinstate those sports, for instance, that the $2 million, the extra $2 million goes away.
That's her threat. Whether that happens or not is yet to be seen. Yeah.
Okay, that's true. And I haven't been able to identify this because I don't know if it's on or off the record, but they seem to think that the threat is even deeper, that all funding is.
That's what I said. I thought there'd be no more athletics, right?
That's exactly right. So it's not just the $2 million, but it'd be,
No more athletics. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. So unless you bring it back. So.
But it's still very hostage taking, you know?
That's exactly
not a good feeling.
So that's at the top of our minds as well here. And I'm happy to take any questions.
So how do you envision these conversations? I will say that AD Nunez and I have met with together with Mike, and they have a very good relationship and is open to conversations about academic literacy as well as. But how would you see having those conversations with balancing the academic mission, right? Because I think the pushback you get is that we think we only talk about athletics. And you're saying, gosh, we don't talk about it. But on our side, let's just say if there were sides, people say, well, gosh, what about the academic mission? How would you approach that? What do you think?
With athletic department or with us?
Well, you leading a conversation. How would that go? How would you broker both sides?
I think
putting
it's
you on the spot
pretty
a little,
easy.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I think it's been really easy. I think that's been just 2 or 3 months that we are as an athletic council. We're trying to build that trusting relationship with coaches, with administration, so we can have that conversation. Okay. And now we're getting to the point where we actually can do it. And that's why setting the subcommittees out, there's academic integrity, there is compliance, and then there's basic governance and equity subcommittee. Mm-hmm. And what they've done is they've gone out and identified metrics by which we can actually assess compliance and by which we can assess academics so we can engage in these conversations. Because before, we were very reactive. You know, we would only talk about things that the vice president of athletics would bring to the council. We need to that's stopping, right? Exactly. We need to actually stay on top of the numbers. How many transferring and why? What are our GPAs? What are our graduation rates? You know, what are the red flags potentially that are raising? So we need to stay on top of that. We just can't rely on information from them. By doing that, and this has been the side effect, Caitlin. This has been the exciting thing, actually. The side effect has been, and this has been completely unattended, is now we're getting buy-in from athletics. We're getting buy-in athletics because they are recognizing a council that actually is going out and seems to be active and caring about it, right? And now we've got a room full, and Amy can attest to it, we've got a room full of athletic staff and participation, high participation,
who are engaged,
high attendance, who are engaged, who are ready to have these conversations.
Right.
And I have to give a lot of due respect to Eddie because he's been extremely open.
But it's because you've come at him with the right attitude. I mean, I can't underline how much the personal relationships play a role in everything we do in governance.
Yeah.
So really, bravo to you.
So we're trying. So the budget, this is when, the next two meetings are really going
to
be.
But I'd like you to think, I understand the conversation within athletics, and maybe we don't need to take time here, but I'm curious about the discussion across the campus. How do we broker that conversation? How do you go to academics who feel, gosh, we don't have phones in our offices, or I don't have printers that work, you know, but you want me to give you more money?
This is where Eddie's been on the same page. You know, it's a public relations nightmare for him.
I know.
To say, we're getting $2 million extra money while we're losing telephones.
Yeah.
Right, and he doesn't want that.
Of course,
right. It doesn't make sense politically for him from a PR standpoint, right? And so this is where it's saying that conversation, you know, that we have with athletics that we can bring to the faculty senate, and the students are ready to talk about this. You know, we're ready to talk about this. The staff are ready to talk about this. They've been talking about this, doing the strategic plan for, you know, this engaging the conversation. We want to be right in the middle of that. So to answer your question, I would love for the athletic council to be the heart of that conversation.
Okay.
Because we're all sitting around this table, and then if you trust us with that, we can bring it back to you. You know, then eventually we can report to you, and then
it'd be great if we could do something before the end of the year.
I'm hoping that.
Next year, you know, different senators, we go through the summer, you know, something else has happened in athletics, God forbid, you know. So it'd be nice to, I'm sorry. Hopefully that would
be.
I'm an optimist,
like
sorry.
Coming into our February meeting, we're at the point now where we can make some inroads in this conversation.
Okay, and also their charge is very potent. Some of you are different. But when we first looked at it, I mean, their charge actually has them discussing, well, not plays with the coaches, but, you know, salaries and things like this with the coaches. And none of this is taken care of.
And at reviewing schedules at the beginning of every season to make sure that they comply with NCAA standards
and our
finals, finals week. And so, we're doing what we can to stay on top of that.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Go get your kids.
But do you guys have any questions? Yeah.
Provost has a question. All right, in all fairness to John Lavelle, I got to take Lee first. Sorry.
Okay. I'm no expert in NCAA and athletic conference rules. I've never played athletics, and I can barely walk and chew gum. But it seems to me, given my observation of college athletics, which I do follow, that the business model for men's basketball and men's football has changed over the last, I don't know, 5 years, maybe as long as 10 years, and that the business model now is hire a coach who is absolutely at the pinnacle of ability for a lot of money, and then recruitment of the best athletes will follow that coach, and then the team will do well in their competitions. I think think that's the business model now.
Yeah.
And I don't think we can compete given our finances.
You can see that
business model.
That's exactly right. That's the conversation we need to have.
So
right?
If we can't compete in that business model,
That's right. But here's the thing, is that in the run through real facts, and that's what I mean by there's literally empirical work on this. It's called the athletics trap. The universities all across the nation are getting trapped in this athletic budget. It's a tit for tat, and we've been hurt by this. Things like buyout, right? Contract buyouts, those never really existed. And now we're dealing with these contract buyouts, and it's because you can't get a good coach without doing this contract buyout or without these 5 to 10 year deals, right? So, and then that's really costly. And you hear the logic that, you know, we can't compete with Colorado State because they get more money from the state, or they'll get money from tuition. Well, and that's the tit for tat. We need to raise tuition because they're, you know, so, and that's the trap that you get into. And that athletics all across the nation are getting into, and we need to figure out, we need to have a conversation. That's what I mean. What's the value of athletics, and how much are we willing to spend?
Maybe we shouldn't be in Division I.
We were talking about that, too. Yeah. Okay, quickly, Provost, 1 second.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike. It sounds good. I think I maybe know the answer to this, but I'm not involved in the athletic stuff that's been handled out of Arkansas. I feel like we were played probably for 30 years on the academic side of the house. We were played by athletics. Mm-hmm. Are you confident that's not going on now? Do you feel like it's pretty transparent? The tone and tenor of the stuff is crucial.
Okay, two different words. Okay, two different. Okay, so yes, I think the tone that we've established now is collegiate. And I think that also has a lot to do with Eddie too. I think he's really set the tone, an appropriate tone. Transparent, yes. When it comes to academics, when it comes to some of these compliance issues that I was referring to earlier, we're getting to a point now where, I mean, their records are pretty good. And I think they're doing it, and I think Amy deserves a lot of credit too here. It's really proactive when it comes to compliance and really proactive when it comes to academics. The transparency question is a statewide issue right now that is hitting the athletics department and a lot of us hard right now. It's like donors. You know, should we make donors transparent IPA requests? I think that's what the athletic department is trying to battle with right now. And I would say right now that yes, to answer your question, it is collegial. I think it'll be a test of that collegiality moving forward when we start to balance this conversation with academics versus athletics a little bit. I'd like to believe that we've established a relationship where we can have an honest conversation like that. And then the transparency from our perspective, what we really care about on academics, you know, how student athletes are doing in the classroom, how they're doing with compliance issues, with integrity. I'd say, yeah, everything that we ask for, they are delivering, anything short of sort of FERPA requirements, right? Yeah. I've been pleased. So
in deference to your children, you've got to go.
Sorry,
I love Michael because he's the only person that speaks faster than I. I find myself getting calm listening to that. Someone else can take
Please email me. Come by my office. I'm always happy to take questions. The more I hear from them, the better.
Thank you, Michael.
Much.
Okay, thanks, we'll talk to you later. Yeah. You should probably want to join his team. It's not a dull group. And we're finally doing something. Okay, now my distinct pleasure, I want to introduce you Regent Doug Brown, who I should have done earlier. My apologies. Doug Brown is one of my favorite people on campus. He's the former dean of the business school, and he's responsible for the new building they have. That's one thing about him. He was also at Stanford, a trustee at Stanford, right? And he was a regent here years ago. So he's definitely been in this job before. And the reason he's here is, well, they invited him, and he's just always interested in what's going on with UNM. Whenever I have a question, I've reached out to him, and I feel like we're co-conspirators behind the scenes and things. And so he just responded within, 2 minutes, I'd love to come. So on your job, I'd like Doug to tell us a little bit about himself, but I'd like you to talk about maybe what's been missing in your minds from the Board of Regents or things you think are important for him to consider as he takes on this new role. Doug, thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm very fond of Pamela and the leadership you've given. And, I mean, you're the keepers of the flame of shared governance, which is just essential for the proper working of the university. And becoming a dean for 5.5 years, I just came to so admire the dedication of the faculty to their field and to the students. Uncommon. I might give you an example, just the contrast between academia and the corporate world.
Mm.
When a CEO of a major corporation retires, what do they go do?
they go play golf, or then we take on some, maybe some community thing if they're right-minded. When the administrator of a major university or a dean retires and they come from the faculty, they generally go back into the faculty. They generally go right back into the classroom. They go back into teaching because that's where their heart is. Imagine the CEO going back into the lab or back into the sales desk. I mean, that's absurd, but that's just the contrast of the dedication that you have. And I just think that is such an important value that just transcends all university activities. There's a sea change about to occur here. Much of it is at the governor's level. This governor has really, to me, played a proper role. And when there were five of us new regents all lined up in a row, I suppose. And the senators were up there. And one of them asked a really key question. Okay, now have you been talked to by the governor about priorities? No. How about you? No. Oh, well, what about the governor's staff? No. And you should say, they leaned back and said, really? Surprised and really pleased. I think the senators understand the proper relationship.
Yeah.
Now, we should be interested in what the governor is thinking and doing and the legislators. And by the way, the key to legislative relationships is relationship.
Right.
Building those things over time, stability, and not just running up when your ox is about to be gored, but saying, oh, by the way, here's an article that might be of interest to you, or whatever, just establishing this relationship. When I kicked off the new building at the business school, because I've been state treasurer and I knew a lot of the folks up there, I ran around Santa Fe and we got $721,000 of earmarked funds to chip into the new building. Okay, and that's just strictly on relationships. We need to build that. We need to do more of that in a very positive way. There's a lot of fires to help stomp out, and we need your guidance on how we can best play a role. But a couple of overarching things. One is this enrollment thing. We might fortunately have a bit of a blip up this year compared to last. This is going to be an ongoing secular problem because birth rates are down. APS is down 2 or 3% this year. They're down about, at the kindergarten level, we're down 20%. That little pig in the python is going to be going through for a long time. And we've got a number of sort of perfect storm activities. Foreign students have been more difficult. Okay. With the economy getting better, there are fewer people dropping out into academia. There's the crime problem is a deterrent here. I think each of these things, I think, are on the road to getting a little better. But then there's the competition from academia, from Purdue Kaplan University. Mm-hmm. Arizona State's on a roll. They hope to have as many students offline, I mean, online as they do on campus, and there are already 45,000 students on campus. There are just a great many of these competitive factors. So we have a great product, and that's what you deliver. We have done, to me, a feeble job of marketing. Partly that's been resources, it's not to reflect on the people trying to do their best. We need to put a lot more into that. We need to establish relationships with all the high school counselors. We need to get our message out of state to Texas and California.
Right.
We need to articulate consistently much better with the community college folks. There's ever so many ways that we can play on this and get the right kind of publicity out and talk to our students. How about giving little bounties to our current students for referring in friends and brothers and sisters and whatever? I just think we've got to hit on all cylinders to keep competitive in enrollment because the general trends are going to continue to slide down with the K through 12 enrollment sagging. athletics. I'm a soccer supporter. Have been for years. Jeremy, I think, has done a great job. And however, that said, there was a process, okay? And all sides weighed in, and one can quibble about the analysis and so on that was done. But it was done, and it was voted on by the regents twice, 7-0. Athletic director recommended, the president recommended. In a week I'm charging in here, it'll just be tearing a scab off a wound at this point. We want to support the government.
And we can revisit that in time, but I think it has to be in the context of what Michael was talking about, an overall view of the athletics, the role within the university, and then we can sort of sort out maybe Crocker can, soccer can come back as a varsity sport at some point. Maybe it becomes a club-level support in the meantime. I was an old student athlete. I described my career as walk on and run off. I was a tennis player. But it's a, I think it can have a very positive relationship with the community if done right, done ethically, and of course, reasonable success on the field or court. It certainly has a big negative effect when you don't do it right, and we're seeing that from Patty Lundstrom and others. So I think we can make big improvements. Budget problems are nationwide in athletics, unless you're Tuscaloosa and you've got some. The disparity between the Power Five conferences and all the rest of them is shameful. Utah left the Mountain West Conference about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was reported when they did their TV revenue went from $800,000 to $22
million.
Whoa. What? Whoa. The professional sports counterbalance. You got the worst team, you get the first draft choice. Mm-hmm. Baseball has a revenue sharing formula. The NBA has a counterbalancing formula. So it isn't the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Except it never worked for the Knicks.
Yeah. Well, Spike hasn't driven it hard enough. But I think I'd like to talk to Eddie Nunez and to see if we can get the commissioners of the second tier of conferences to lock arms and say, we need a better deal. And if you think that can't happen, think about Billie Jean King. Mm-hmm. And there was always the argument that women ought to be paid a lot less than the tennis. You don't want to play 3 sets, and we play 5 sets. And gee, we've got bigger TV draw, we have more attendance. And she said, okay, we won't play. Oh. And she just stuck with it. Now they're getting total parity in all the tennis tournaments worldwide. It can happen. And I think there are levers we can pull. We might not get all the way there, but we can do better. Well, if we get another $500,000 a year, something like that, in TV revenues, that could do a lot to us closing the gap. So there's a number of things that we can do, and I think we ought to commit ourselves to doing it and doing it right. But backing off a D1 is a possibility. I don't think we want to do that in basketball. We've had such a tradition.
Certainly women's basketball.
Mm-hmm. So that's a balancing thing, and the conference membership is at jeopardy, and there's the Title IX issues and so on. It's complex. But we're determined. We'll try to play a positive part and get the right things going. Other aspects, questions?
But you feel to support President Stokes is the right thing right now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. We wondered what would happen.
We've got everything's in transition. Mm-hmm. With the administration, Board of Regents, this, the that, and the other thing. And I think it's a very positive transition because I think the kind of people... I'm on the search committee for the new... Senior VP for Finance Administration. We got a great pool. Mm-hmm. We're down to the top 9 right now, and I'd say there's definitely a gem or two in that pool. Right. So.
Excellent. Yeah. Questions or comments? And don't be shy. We've talked about things for years. Come on, thoughts. Oh, Willie.
I'm never shy.
Someone has got to pinch it for the occasion.
So, those who don't study history are going to repeat it.
I was a history major.
Okay. And the history of this country is that poor, uneducated immigrants come to our shores. They work really, really hard, and their kids become, they send them to college, and they become the core of a middle class and higher citizenship. Right now, our birth rate is such that we're below the replacement rate for our population. And we depend upon immigrants, just as we have in the past, to augment our population and, in turn, augment the students in our colleges and universities. So, obviously, there's no light at the end of the tunnel until 2020. But it may be something to look forward to that if we do have a change in national leadership, that things may improve for university applications, because that whole process that has gone on over and over again with the Irish and the Italians and the Asians is going to repeat itself with the Central Americans. So...
Is there a question in there, Lee, or just a comment? Okay, okay. No, I feel like I'm at the White House now.
I'll comment back. I certainly believe that. Mm-hmm. I mean, so much of the energy and vitality is from people who sought this country. Mm-hmm. They are the most patriotic, most mm-hmm. American people, appreciative mm-hmm. persons. And, mm-hmm. and you know, as far as that energy, what Voltaire said, the sound of history mm-hmm. is the sound of hobnailed boots climbing stairs and mm-hmm. silken slippers sliding down.
Other just comments and reflections.
Oh, like please, that. Would you send me some of your comments about the report of the HLC that you found dubious? And it's, that's beyond spin.
Yeah.
Okay.
As long as I'm not identified.
Yeah. we take great pains to shelter ourselves.
That's the sort of thing that we ought to
do. And I'll send you our report. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, other comments? Yes, yes. Casiano.
Just say comment, question. How are you going to approach now that you're on the other side? Because, you know, the way I see that you could be... extreme value of the university is by taking a much, much more ruthless view of what's happening here rather than being sympathetic to our complaints. Because we need to push this university, keep pushing it, not the way it is, but what it should be given the change in reality in our society. So I think I'm not saying what you should do, but the way that the regions should look at the university, they should have a very, very critical look at what's going on and be aware of the several factors that impact the university, the government, the population, the demographics, the national situation. And then say, this is where we think you guys should be pushing in which direction.
Well, that's why I want to know Lee's thoughts. That said, we ought to have an underlying foundation that we are here for the university mm-hmm. to help make it succeed, and never be holding our own little press conferences to tell everybody, everyone else believe like I did, everything would be okay. Mm-hmm. The spokespeople for the university ought to be the president of the Board of Regents, or whoever they designate, like the health science center people mm-hmm. and so on. But I think we need to be on the same team, but just like in a family, you ought to be critical of what's going on, but always with the idea for making it better.
Yes, Robin.
I just had a question. Do you guys have to have orientation as Board of Regents?
Well, I'm setting one up. We are going to be doing that, and we're going to be following the AGB guidelines, which are super. You are on what a region ought to do. Mm-hmm. The AGB really has it down, and we're going to, in about 2-3 weeks, we're going to have about a 6-hour orientation, people coming in to help us identify best practices and get into the right role. That's been overlooked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just so you know, we tried to do that about 3 years in a row.
We were going
to buy
them.
And it was just shot
books.
Down by that Board of Regents. Yeah, we had books, we read chapters, we discussed it. Yeah.
And then in time, we're going to have a big offsite strategic planning thing mm-hmm. among us once we begin to know what we're talking about. But it's important that we get beyond stomping out the fires mm-hmm. and looking to the 5-10-year
right.
trends.
And
in higher education, and how can we get out in front of that rather than just reacting?
Did you have a follow-up, Robin?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's important to acknowledge the designations that UNM has in regards to diversity, in regards to being a Hispanic-serving institution, minority-serving institution, serving 24 tribal nations in the state of New Mexico, and to really honor that and embody that, especially as a research-minded institution. I think UNM is uniquely set up be able to set the precedence for the future of what this country should look like and does look like, even though we don't always represent that in our faculty and our staff and even our administration. I think that we should be looking towards that. How do we make not only our student body but also our faculty, staff, and administration also reflect that as well.
And if we can make it much more of an advantage, of a very positive factor, not that we're coping or observing our responsibilities, I think it's a very positive factor. The rest of the country is going to look like New Mexico in 25, 30 years. Yeah. And so this is going to be a laboratory for how to get it right.
Yeah.
And if I could just echo with Dr. Minthorn, and thank you, because you were one of the first deans who actually gave us a letter of support when we created the FRUIT, the U.S. and Global Diversity and Inclusion Requirement, which was 5 years ago now. But one of the things I've seen after visiting UT Austin and ASU is that they create big ideas around things like generation equity, social transformation, and about 6 years ago, a group of us, including people who were in Native American studies, Africana studies, women's studies, the Institute for Race and Social Justice, actually proposed a college for social transformation that would harmonize and brand our work in a way that would bring about fundamental changes in power sharing, curriculum, hiring. And the response was, well, we don't have any money to support this at this time. Great idea, but we don't have any money. I'm hoping that that's something that we can think about as a big idea that could actually make and embody our values and our tradition of serving
it's something
community.
That can be embraced by the faculty senate and brought forward too as part of
things go through the curriculum.
Your charge.
Yeah.
And I must say that the grand challenges that we are of that nature too. We're just kicking them off. Mm-hmm. And opioid and aging program. I think and the water sustainability are very important. But really, ought to think about taking advantage of our advantage of diversity. And promoting it and extending it. So,
somebody else, come on, you guys. Cassiano, go ahead.
I'm just going to make a point. I'm sorry, but the thing is that soccer is a truly international participation and expectation sport. It is the sport of the Hispanic majority in the state. And the other thing that I have, and I'm sorry to say this, but I feel despair that Title IX is being used as a burden and not a recognition of its right. So every time instead of saying, bummer, we need to satisfy the Title IX, we should be saying, oh my goodness. You know, it's the same thing that the civil rights, saying, oh bummer, you have to fulfill the civil rights. This is, seriously, this is what Title IX had. Title IX was brought in to address a very, very serious issue. And we have been using it as an excuse to say, well, we can't have soccer anymore because we have to fulfill Title IX. This is beyond belief, okay? And the other thing is that the football team has 85 players. Only 40 of them play. And the Title IX people have said that 65 is a good number for a football team. Okay? That's it.
Well, as long as you got a D1 football program, you're going to have a big problem fully satisfying the several prongs of requirements of Title IX. Period. No school in the country is really very successful at that. What they do is they skate by making a little incremental progress towards the goal, and so they're given a free pass. I'm a soccer fan. I hope to bring it back. We're not going to do it right now. It's just too disruptive to our presence.
Okay. Okay, any other questions? Yes. Oh, Rob, thank you.
I just want to address what you said about vision out to 5 to 10 years. So I've been at this university for almost 20 years. And I've seen a lot of presidents come and go. And I've seen a lot
You could have been here 5 years and seen that.
Yes. And I've seen a lot of destruction this past Regents Board has committed to the university. And one of the things that I just want to emphasize is I do truly believe that we have a president now. She's very strong, very strong-willed. She's very focused without being a bulldog. And I think that's really important right now, not to have somebody hyper-aggressive in the presidency, but have the level of strength she has right now. And I think with the new Board of Regents that we have now, I think we can start looking at the long-term 5 to 10 years, like you're saying, in the future. And so personally, myself, and I know some of my colleagues I've talked to, is that with these big, huge changes we've had, I'm hoping for stability
over
the number of years so that we can get the signature of this president and of this new board to get this university on the right track. And I also just want to say thank you for your passion and your impassioned voice and your comments and forward thinking. This is very, very refreshing from what we've seen.
Thank you, Rob. Because what they're not saying is what Rob is saying. Yeah.
the instability at the top filters down all the way to the administration. When I was a dean, I'd been a dean for 3 years, and I looked around the table among the 11 members of the Dean's Council, and I was the longest serving dean. Among 11 in 3 years. I mean, so you get the turnover of the president and the provost and the deans and so on, and you just can't get any 5 to 10 year outlook. Well, we hope to do everything we can to stabilize this.
That's very good news for us. Thank you, sir. Okay, thank you so much. Okay. Now, you're welcome. You might enjoy coming back for the next conversation, but we have to. I need a motion to close the meeting for the honorary degree discussion. May I have a motion? A second? All in favor?
All right.
I'm not asking for opposition. So I have to ask everyone who's not a senator, that means everyone, to take a hike for a little bit. So now I'd like a motion to certify that all we discussed during this brief time out was the honorary degree. Thank you, second. Thank you. All in favor? Okay, there we go. We've done it officially now. We're back in session. All right, so I am pretending to be Vinny because he's got out with, I think his mom is suffering a little bit, a little ill. So I will be doing the Form Cs. These come to you as a motion from Ops. So I need a second to approve these Form Cs in front of you.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions. All right, that's super important. Thank you very much. So we're, and by the way, I just want to mention that Regent Robert Schwartz did not abandon us. We couldn't get an answer from him before the deadline for the agenda. He will come to our next meeting. I didn't want to cast an aspersion on him because he didn't get yes, already, yeah. I'm going to be meeting with Regent Begay. I offered her a job to come, but instead she asked me for a breakfast meeting. A lot of our regents have day jobs, and we're actually lucky that one of the most influential ones has time to spend with us right now. And the other regents are Kimberly Sanchez-Real. What does she run? She has a company, a startup.
She's CEO of a company in New York, very old region. She's a capitalist by background.
Okay, yeah, a Harvard, Stanford graduate. Rob Schwartz was a law professor, and in a way I think he'll be the most, like, close we'll get to a faculty regent in a while. Lovely man. And as I told you, he loves piano, so I'm pretty excited to find. He came to me and said, I kind of follow you around to hear your concert. I was kind of like, back off, dude. But come closer. But come closer. Thank you so much. Say it again. No, he was wonderful. Okay. And then we have the student regent is Melissa Henry, a grad student in College of Ed, I think. Is that right, Stephanie?
Counselor.
Mm-hmm. But where's her home? We don't have a counselor.
Where's that, oh, well, the College of Education has a counselor.
That's what I said, a College of Ed, yeah, but not social work. So who am I missing?
But she's a licensed
Doug,
counselor.
Kimberly, oh, Sandra Begay,
yes.
Who was a former regent of ours, and a Native American who's very busy. She just got appointed to what with the legislature?
The environmental control area of the city of Albany.
And her calendar, my meeting with her is at 7 in the morning. That's just what I'm saying. So they're all busy. But I really think, because you've heard me talk about regents for so long, we're really blessed with this group. This is a group who's going to care about us and who will at least listen to us. And I don't believe micromanaging will be their first line of offense. I was going to say, but it's more offense. All right. So I put this way so we could talk about whatever we wanted, discussion of current state of affairs at UNM, but let's just get right to it. So the unionization of UNM.
Oh.
I know. So some of us, I think most of us knew that they were talking about it. I will be quite honest, and some people here are involved in it, visitors perhaps, and also others. They did not approach the Senate. They did not approach the Senate proper, you know, members, yes, in the Senate. They did approach COG last semester, and Sever said, why don't we have an all-faculty meeting and talk about it? And they said, oh, no, we don't want to do that. So a lot of us felt this was not the most genuine way to go about it. I'm not here to offer my own opinion, because that's not my job in this situation.
But I have had meetings now with Jackie Hood, the head of AFNT, and Sever, the head of COG, and myself. We've met privately. I've met with legal counsel just to understand what the next process is. And I know, John, you're a lawyer. You may understand some of these processes. We wanted the school to pay for us to have a labor lawyer come and speak with us who was not invested either way, meaning not our counsel, because they said, oh, we're getting a legal opinion. I said, I don't think the people who wanted a union are interested in your people's opinion. You know, thanks so much. But the problem is the school cannot pay for us to bring in a lawyer. So I have calls into some lawyer friends I know to see what can happen. What COG and AFNT and my leadership would like to do is have, we don't want an all-faculty meeting first. We'd like a forum for discussion. We just want to be able to educate everyone on what is a union, what does it do. Let me tell you what I do know so far and see if I can get my numbers correct. So they, I'll try not to say they and we because it gets complex as to who I'm talking about. The folks, the petitioners, claimed that they need 30% of the agreed-upon classification of people. So they submitted titles to our president, and they used all the titles, research, adjunct, part-time visiting, research, whatever. And they're claiming that of that, and again, I'll say we're claiming too, so I'm not trying to color it. They're saying that they have 30% of their classification has signed cards, which would allow it to go forward. The next step is it's in the ball of the university. The university will now look at the, they don't get to see the petitioner, so anyone who signed, fear not, you know, your name will not be, you know, put out there. But they will look at the classifications and go, let me just throw this one out there. I'm not saying this is the one. A visiting professor is here for a month. They should not be voting. They may say that. And then they'll come back and they go back and forth. UNM has a labor board, which has been dysfunctional because there hasn't been a labor person on it for over a year. It consists of a labor person, a management person, and a neutral party. Oddly enough, this is a UNM board that manages the five unions that are within the university, and that's like custodial, and I don't know all of
them. Police.
Police, right, thank you. That's a big
one. Clerical workers.
That did help them get a raise last year, I will say that. So these people are already supposedly functional. They happen not to be. I've heard that the union folks have now appointed someone to that. The next step is it goes to the Board of Regents. And then they have to approve that person. Now, I don't know how long those things take. The union people gave the president this, let's say, 8 days ago. The 10-day deadline, I'm not doing the math very well, is March 1st, this Friday. My understanding is the university will have to ask for an extension because it's too quick for them to do the work. But I don't know. We'll see what will happen. I don't want to weigh in on that. I do know that, by the way, the numbers we put forth are different than the ones the legal counsel has. So I am interested in questions like who is eligible to vote? Like in this categorization, whether I'm for or against, I still don't know that everyone should be voting on it. Like should a grad student vote on this? I don't know, right? That's the questions I want answered by someone more grown up in this area than I. So we have on main campus and branch, don't quote me, but you can put it down. I hear there are a lot of numbers, but this is in the ballpark. 909 voting faculty. What the Constitution has determined voting. And remember, the union will say that's not so. You know, they have every right to come up with their own categorization. And on Main and Branch campus, we have 1776 all faculty. So the people that don't vote but that are here. HSC, the numbers will surprise you. 905 voting faculty, 1296 all faculty. I mean, it's really, you know, a large portion of our faculty. So total, if you don't mind my math, 3,072 total faculty, 3,072, and total voting, 1,814. Now, I heard from legal counsel that they're getting all sorts of numbers on that, and I said, my gosh, if the whole place went up in smoke, wouldn't you think they'd have a list of who the actual faculty were? She said, like, manifest. So we were a little surprised that we can't get the right numbers on who teaches here.
Oh, come on. This is UNF.
I know, but it's still, it's frustrating. So here's, as I understand it, if someone knows more than I seem to be the one telling people, but that doesn't mean I'm right. I've worked hard to get a little information. So you know how dangerous someone with a little information is. So if they, let's say they agree on the classification. They say we want ABC on it. We say we want AB. We settle on ABD, whatever that is. 30% of those people then have to have demonstrated an interest in this situation. Then it goes out, and this is what I have not gotten yet a call back from legal because I wondered about this. Then it goes out for a faculty vote, but I don't understand, is that the 3,000 people voting? I'm guessing it's all the faculty. of that group, the quorum is 40% need to show up to vote. Doesn't matter how they vote. And, of course, if they wanted to win, 51% of that group has to do it. So if only 20% show up to vote, even if those other 30% of that classification wanted it, it doesn't go anywhere. So I was told, and again, we've worked really hard, actually, in the last 2 weeks, trying to read a little bit about this, and we're still way behind the curve. But years ago, and I'm going to reach out to Vivian. Rick, maybe you can help me. Vivian Valencia was our former university secretary, and apparently, was it Beulah Woodfin? Was she a Senate president?
Yes.
Okay. They tried this years ago and looked into it, and for some reason they decided it was not advantageous for UNM, or at that time for UNM. I don't have the details. So what we'd like, here's our ideal, the governance people would like ideally, a forum where we have an unbiased labor lawyer talk to us about the pros and the cons, someone who is not for this group or against this group. And then in the ideal world, two faculty members, one from an institution where unionizing worked and one where it didn't work. And what I'd like to talk to you about is what could be possible. Nora, go ahead.
I'd like to volunteer to be a faculty member speaking to what it's like.
Because you were in Oregon? Yeah, because I know we're modeling it somehow on something in Oregon. Yeah. At least you're here. We don't have to fly you in.
It's still painful.
There's no money.
Chocolate chip cookies.
You'd be the reason we wouldn't have snacks the next 2 meetings. I don't know how many that girl. Yeah. So Nora, I do appreciate that. I was thinking it would be more fair to have them from outside the school.
That's right.
Right? But I would love, let's have you, you know. We've been meeting for a week just to try to figure. We're trying to stay with the curve, not ahead of it. Well, we're guessing they won't make the March 1st deadline, so we think we'll have time. But heck, maybe they'll surprise us.
Okay. Well, if I can be
yeah.
Can speak in detail about what the meeting.
Okay, so that'd be great at a large faculty forum, right?
I was just going to say maybe she could refer somebody from that university.
Yeah. Sorry, Lee, I didn't hear your question.
Does the union include grad students?
They're in their own union.
They have a union, but I don't know if they're included. I haven't seen the categorization.
They're not included.
They're not included.
I know her law went to OSU.
But sometimes they are in other unions. So there are a lot of questions for governance. When they first came out with this, when they were, some people used actually the word stalk, so I'm just going to say that some people felt they were kind of stalked by representatives. They were saying, no, we're really here to fight for wages and benefits. And then when we read the paper the other day, it seemed that they were also talking about faculty governance issues, mm-hmm. like AF&T. Mm-hmm. And so that's very alarming for some people, because I guess some people are worried. I'm trying to be just reporting what I know. Some people are concerned that, let's say, the abolishment of governance could be difficult. But they could convince us in a meeting that that's not so. So these are the problems. Yeah, go ahead, Nora.
Faculty union does not replace faculty.
Well, I know you say that, but we've read a lot of information that says it does. And I don't care so much about the Senate as much as I care about AF&T, actually. That's a very important body.
They're different.
I totally hear you. And we've been reading a lot of literature that gives us pause. This is what scares me, Nora. We want to have a real conversation, because smart people like you say this, and smart people that we're hearing from say the other. And somewhere there's a
how could
truth
we,
to know.
I mean, if we have faculty governance, if that's before this institution, how outside institution, it
sounds ideal that it shouldn't, but we've been reading that in many universities it does.
In my experience,
it
did not happen, but I think if you
have... This is the conversation I want to have publicly with people more knowledgeable than I.
If I may speak out,
please,
you're used to the word stalk. That's offensive.
Yeah. It's not what I said. That's what people said.
No, but you're reporting it.
You're
putting a certain spin on it, and I think it's kind of...
Okay, well, I'm trying to report what I've heard.
Thank you
for your comment.
What makes the percentage to be voting faculty and total faculty? Is that those categories that are defined?
That's the category that will be defined, and then at 30% of whatever they agree, the lawyers on both sides agree to, it'll be 30% of that categorization.
Whatever they
determine. I don't know how that's done. You know, they'll barter, I guess. I don't know how that works.
Yes, sir. You know, there has been such a history of shenanigans in corporate labor relations, of people trying to cheat the system or trying to exclude or trying to do things. There's just there's a whole web of laws and practices. And I think it would really behoove us not to have any very substantive discussions of this, without a thorough briefing by a labor lawyer who knows where all the landmines are procedurally, because you could really discredit whatever side you're on by stumbling upon one of these things and being thrown out. Or
you know, we've avoided addressing it here because out of deference to our colleagues.
I'm not saying this, this discussion. I'm just saying almost anything substantively do can be something that they found in Ohio was an unfair labor practice
and
comes back and haunts you. So I think early on, get a labor lawyer and say, here's the ground rules about how you can
If you know someone, he'll do it.
Well, I don't know one, but because there's not a very heavy hotbed of union activity in this town, so you probably don't have that much of active labor. Better find one early on and start to.
Well, this is the first conversation we've had publicly because we didn't want to expose the people that didn't want to be exposed. And now it's out, so we are doing it. Wait, Alan, and then Carla.
Thank you. Just a comment that the capital government issue is going to be regulated strongly by the regional vendor, which you'll see how the commission should be protected as far as the regulations.
You think the HLC is involved somehow in what unions can and cannot do?
The HLC ensures that the universities have this happening.
Okay.
So,
great.
Accreditation, we have to respect the rule of faculty governance, which should be in front.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Alan. Carla.
I was disturbed that I had to read about this in the newspaper instead of hearing about it from my university colleagues.
And they didn't talk. They didn't approach HSC.
Me.
They did. They didn't approach HSC, and that's what's concerned. A lot of your colleagues came to me and said, "Why didn't they come to us?"
Yeah, that's why I had no idea.
I know it's been trying. I'm not exactly sure why. Yeah, Lee.
So we do have unions that are part of UNM that could be a resource, possibly. Mm-hmm. So UNMH, the hospital, is unionized by 1199.
Okay.
Is a national healthcare union. We had it in New York at the Sinai where I trained.
Okay.
And believe it or not, the residents and fellows, the trainees, are unionized. The Committee of Interns and Residents is a union. And so that might be a resource.
Okay, that's a great idea. All right, I'll ask you for that information.
Stefan.
Yeah, Stefan. Sorry.
This is funny. Isn't the veteran sending us some discretionary funds that we use to,
I think I've got the $400 left to get us through the next 2 months of snacks. Yeah.
But I'm just saying that this is an important topic.
I agree with you.
It should be part of the veteran's meeting to get information. The first step in the process is to obtain some information.
That's what we're trying to do, Stefan.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we've only got this information in the last week, right? So I'm only telling you what I know. I don't want to embellish what I don't know. You know,
seems to be trying to fly under the radar somehow.
So
they wanted to get the signatures, is what I was told. But
So I know that AF&T has lawyers. So why couldn't we also get a labor lawyer that has expertise? And the city of Albuquerque has a very powerful union. I think this is the first university I've worked at that doesn't have a union. I used to be at UMass Boston and at City University of New York, where as a graduate student, I only had healthcare because there was a union.
Okay.
So I think that we definitely have expertise locally, and that AF&T has access to lawyer
and
funds, so we should have access.
But it's
as
the middle of the year. Can you speak to that? You have a budget.
I mean, the attorney that we have for AF&T is specific. Their MOU and their contract is specific to AF&T, so we can't utilize that attorney for these union purposes, nor would they be an expert in that arena.
No, but that's not what I'm suggesting.
She's saying if they have one, we should have one.
If, to do our job, we need access to
that
a lawyer.
That could be negotiated at the presidential level.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, I've got a call to one lawyer, but he's not a labor lawyer, but he's in a big firm. Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, we really do want it. Scott, sorry for my adjectival editorial, but we really do want the forum to be just information. And everyone asks questions and gets answers and then votes their conscience, whatever that is, you know. We don't know enough about it. And even the people I talk to on the other side, as it were, you know, from what we're understanding, haven't had the answers to a lot of the questions. And then the university doesn't have all the answers. So I feel like no one has the answers. And I this is such an important issue to faculty.
Were you addressing me?
Well, just when I was telling you about the adjective, but please.
Sure. I mean, I guess my point is that you're selectively choosing what news to report to us.
I'm saying everything I know.
Okay, you heard nothing positive about it?
We haven't really heard
you. Don't
no, they don't talk to us.
All you heard was that your colleagues have been stalking other colleagues.
That's exactly what I had heard, Scott. Remember, they didn't approach me until the end, and then they were, yeah, I'm sorry if it upsets you
it's
that I don't.
It's
not, because I haven't heard the other side. That's why we're having this conversation. If I didn't want to have it, I wouldn't be having it.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem very objective.
Well, I guess I don't know the other side, so sorry, I'm not
What's
able to present it.
Side?
Feel free.
That's what I'm
I don't know what sides
that,
or sides.
What side
Go ahead, Nora.
Positive.
I mean, it seems as if I understand what this is not. Yeah. Sorry, I'm sorry. I understand. As I understand, it's not the same that we do rather than presenting the clustering organization as threatening governance, as threatening the safety of all their faculty. It would be great to have a discussion that we as able to make choice about that we presented with the topic in a loaded way. And I do agree with Scott that it was presented in a loaded way, but I do think that it would be very productive to have a labor attorney in here.
That would be great. And I swear I've only had negative feedback come to me. And that's what I'm unfortunately
saying. I mean, that's
fine,
but I think
yeah.
that
it is. No, it doesn't mean it represents the totality. You're right.
Responsibility
yeah, yeah.
No, just in your preface, though, I mean, to this entire conversation, you were setting us up to believe that this is something entirely negative. Because you described it as the thing not to be talked about.
Okay, well, Lee didn't feel like I'm sorry you did.
One way or the other, Pamela, but I do think that you're influencing everybody.
Oh, I doubt it, but okay.
And calling it stalking is offensive.
But that's what someone said to me, Scott. I'm allowed to report that.
Conveying defamation is defamation. That's the legal reality.
Okay.
Your colleagues as stalking other colleagues. That could give rise to legal liability for a defamation lawsuit.
Oh, come
so
on.
So when you're conveying that, you're also conveying that.
Well, okay. I'm glad I brought it up. But
I think we should not continue with any kinds of defamation.
Yeah.
Can we just close this topic?
We can close the topic. We'll close the topic right now.
And I would like to say that I'd like to hear more about it from a labor lawyer.
Yes, agreed. Agreed.
Labor
lawyers, bonds, whatever, so we have,
Pardon,
yeah,
no, we do want to discuss it, but we'll do it in a different forum.
No, I think this forum is the forum.
I'm with you.
And I'm very kind of concerned that the conversation hasn't gone beyond contacting COG and maybe AFNT. Why is it not gone any further? Why have not we've been informed that there is a movement and suddenly we see the newspaper? That's concerning.
I can't answer that. I wasn't your mom.
Nobody knows.
You maybe the colleagues behind you can answer. I don't have the answer.
No, they won't.
I'm not back for sure. Yeah, well, there was a question as to whether physicians are supervisors.
Go ahead.
Hang on.
Yeah, go ahead,
Leon.
So
all I've seen here is discussing the procedure or something. I think as a faculty senate, we should be discussing what implications this has in terms of benefits and or things that we will need to interface if we have such.
That would be great.
I would rather try to understand this as something that would complement the faculty senate or the governance by the faculty, then start discussing. Yes. By all means, bring the lawyers in, etc., but we're still not discussing the issue.
But I guess, Cassiano, until someone explains that side to us, it would be hard for us to lead that discussion, unless you know a lot about.
No, I don't know anything, but I know it's important.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Go ahead, Nora.
Sorry. This isn't a side issue, I don't think. We just want information so individuals can make decisions.
That's exactly what I
don't think
for.
There's like one
right.
side and another side.
Yeah.
And
well, there are probably a lot of sides.
Meet in the middle and have a
Got
ball.
It.
Or,
so in that spirit, would it be a priority to try to bring in a labor attorney at a Senate?
Absolutely, but we're trying to do it for a faculty meeting, not a Senate, with all COG, the three bodies, the three governing bodies, inviting this situation for all faculty to come and listen.
Okay.
I don't want to narrow it to the Senate.
Do you have a sense of
Well, we're trying to figure that out. We thought we had to move extremely quickly, but if the delay comes from the administration, it gives us some breathing room to find someone good that we can afford. Yeah, hang on, Stefan. So in the next month, I would hope so.
Okay, so
right?
I'll reach out to the Senate.
As soon as you get information, get it to me, and then I'll call. Yeah, because I don't know this field. Thank you.
I'm not sure that a general faculty meeting is really informed. First off, to call a general faculty meeting takes quite some preparation, and they'll take care of
it. No, that's why we're calling it a forum. We're getting rid of that constitutional problem.
The faculty senate is sort of the executive body. Mm-hmm. Now, we have that responsibility to carry this forward, right? And so
agreed.
You're here, you can discuss it, you can get that information, and facilitate it.
I
think that's also
with the three bodies will facilitate together, yeah. Stefan. I don't want to leave out the colleagues who are also concerned. Faculty governance is three prongs: faculty senate, COG, and AF&T. And so, goodbye, Deb. Thank you. Sorry. And so,
have children to pick up.
Oh, sorry. Thank yourself. Thank you for coming. So I agree with you, but they approach. We all approach each other. It's the right thing to do to not exclude anybody that wants to talk about it. And originally, COG wanted to call an all-faculty meeting, and I said, you know, rather than that, which does take a lot of prep, there have to be signatures, and they call, and, you know, all this, we decided, hey, how about we just do a forum where people can come and get information, you know? And so that's our goal.
And that will include the branch campuses?
Oh, everyone. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they've been involved in this. Yeah. Okay. So shall we call it to an end? Right. Yes, Stephen, go ahead.
Has anybody from the union offered to come talk to us?
No one from the union has come. I had one senator approach me who was aware of this, and he met with us in August or September to tell us what was going on. And other than that, no, I was telling colleagues, send them to me. I want to talk to them. Who are they? And then they finally came, but after it had all been done, I guess. So.
And then second question, since the HST wasn't included in part of the discussion, when the eventual vote does come, I'll be part of the vote.
That's what I sent the lawyer a question today. Is the voting faculty who would vote on that, or is it all fact? My guess is it's all fact, but they didn't approach them, so I don't have the answer.
There's a point of view that physicians are supervisors at an educational institution and may not be eligible to be unionized, so that's something the labor lawyer would have.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate on why.
We have also, there are no academic health centers in the country that are unionized, and part of that is because we're almost 100% performance-based pay, and that would go away, and nobody would vote for that. So I suspect that's why we were left out of it. But it was a total surprise to us. That's why it felt, you know, kind of sneaky and...
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the letter that was forwarded to me, it was, you know, so that we can improve faculty governance and things like that. So it felt very much like they were looking to take this over. So that's kind of our reaction, you know, to it was the startup.
I don't think any of us
have seen it.
Yeah,
I haven't
seen
it.
Stephanie, yeah.
No, I should say,
I
appreciate the idea of a public forum to learn more. I'd really like to know more about pros and cons of this of this proposal. But also just, you know, plug in for if we can make that forum available publicly so that people can either
it's meant to be
stream in or, you know, and the recording is available so that people can catch up if they can't make
Once again, it's all money, like Stephanie. I mean, where are we coming up with money for any of this?
Well,
it's almost horrifying.
I mean, my students want to Facebook live stream everything, so, I mean, that's a possibility, but let's look at how we can
100%
make sure that
as open as possible. I just want
to
gather information, disseminate it, and then people can
make
decisions.
Right, totally support that. I just wanted to make sure it's available.
Right.
It's, you know, so for, you know, it's conflicting with surgery or teaching schedules or whatever.
People can go.
We can still access that information.
Great idea. Yes, John.
There's a public comment period under the forum I comment to. Are we there now? Are we at the public comments? So I can make
As soon as I
just
finish
make sure
up.
We adjourn before the public
comment. No, we won't. We won't. Does anyone else have questions for now? I know it's quite late. Okay, so we're done with that. Public comment.
Okay, great. Thank you. I would have waited anyway had I noticed there was this public comment period, so that's great.
Thanks, John.
My concern is just I appreciate what Provost Wood shared in terms of trying to get ahead of issues before being caught in a downward spiral with respect to public relations. And my concern is the focus now on the lack of transparency within the university. And so I would urge my colleagues on this on the Senate here, who represent all of us, I'm a faculty member at the law school, to make sure that we're in compliance with the Open Meetings Act with regard to these meetings. I know that the agenda is advertised in advance to faculty members, but the Open Meetings Act requires more than that. It requires that the public be informed of these meetings and that the agendas be made available in advance in accordance with the requirements.
It goes out.
We send it to UCAM, all voting faculty, the all fac list, and the Senate when we send stuff out.
And that's not the full public, right? That's not the
No. Well, that's the intention that UCAM would disseminate it out, but we can put the request in that they do.
No, I never thought of that, John.
Well,
that's a good idea.
And that's a concern.
It's on the website, of course.
Yeah. The lack of transparency also is manifest in note number 5 on the agenda, which indicates that information found in agenda packets is in draft form only and may not be used for quotes or dissemination of information until approved by the faculty senate. That is opposite transparency. And in fact, all draft documents within the university, generated by the university, anyone within the university, even emails, are subject to being discovered and disclosed to the inspection of public records.
Sure, IFRA. Sure.
So my concern is we have a culture of concealment with regard to the processes of governance at UNM, and the fact that the Senate can get ahead of the curve, as Provost Wood had indicated, using that metaphor, if we get ahead of the curve, we can be a model for transparency by being fully compliant with the requirements of the Open Meetings Act and not be afraid of transparency. I, for example, believe the public would benefit from the conversation, as controversial as it was, that we just had. And by the way, this does not require that there be an opportunity for the public to comment.
No,
that's not
no,
required by the Open Meetings Act. So this is my chance to speak right here.
Right.
It's on the agenda. But I'm concerned about the faculty Senate's committees also engage in secretive meetings, which they maintain opacity, not transparency. I've encountered that problem with the faculty Senate policy committee in particular,
mm-hmm.
which has adopted a rule that forbids faculty members from observing their meetings, even though they do in fact enact policy under the meaning of the Sunshine Laws of the Open Meetings Act, which means they are in continuous noncompliance with the law when they hold their secret meetings and do not allow any of us to come and actually just sit in to observe what policymaking it is that's going on in those meetings.
I know you said IPRA a lot about that. We didn't hear from you for a couple of years. Are you? Did it not get resolved in a way you wanted?
Not as far as I know, because as far as I know, the rule that was adopted by vote of the members of the policy committee back in March of 2016 mm-hmm. has never been rescinded. It remains the policy of the committee to remain non-transparent. Flagrant violation of existing law. And right now, because the HLC is also engaged in inquiring into these particular problems in their
I hear what you're saying.
And because the public, through the Attorney General's office, is shining a very, very strong light on the problem of lack of transparency. I just hope that this committee, the faculty senate, would model fearlessness when it comes to being open. Mm-hmm. And that means...
I think we feel we do. I don't think anyone thought about it going into the community beyond it's on the website and anyone could look at it. I mean, I'm not sure how you would bring it to the community.
And the, right. the Open Meetings Act supplies the models for exactly how to be in compliance. Mm-hmm. Plus, the Attorney General has a compliance guide that this the Faculty Senate should follow in the future when meetings are advertised and all members of the public must be invited except for the closed portion, which are...
Well, yes, we don't disinvite anyone. People like you, anyone who's not a senator comes. We had a couple of other non-senators here today. So,
right.
I mean, I feel for our part, good conscience. Maybe you're bringing something to our attention we need to know. I don't know how you would formally invite the world other than the website. That's just where I'm a little lost right now.
The compliance guide at the Attorney General's office provides the answers to that question.
Well, if you care to send it to us, otherwise it'll probably take a couple of months for us to find it just because we're finishing the year.
It's a public document again, and I was certainly glad.
Great, because my office handles that, we don't. All right, so that exceeded the 3 minutes. I'm just going to point out that public comment is 4. So I'd like to add motion for adjournment. Second, all in favor. Thank you for hanging in there, guys. Appreciate it.
I don't think you were niche on that. Very professional.